What's up, y'all? It's 10 at 3 time in Tennessee. How are you? I hope you're doing well. Hope everything is going right with your world here on this Thursday, January the 15th, 2026. Beware the Ides of January, I believe Caesar was warned. That was the month, right? It obviously
Sure, yeah.
Just kidding. No, we are 2 months, though, from the Ides of March, when Caesar really did need to watch his back. Really should have been more careful. Really should have been more careful that day, Julius Caesar. Just saying. You just always got to have a head on a swivel. That's rule number one going into today's program. I hope you're doing well, though. I hope everything is good with you winter weather-wise. I know that we only got a tiny bit of that Bolivian marching powder here in Knoxville, but I think there was a little bit more dandruff up there in the mountains. You can see there up at Gatlinburg, the live shot. There's a little bit of dandruff up there at the top. We had some flurries.
Yeah, I think that, I just spotted some. Hopefully they pop up again
on
for
that
us.
Camera. We're asking Todd Howell right now if he could make it snow a little bit more. I don't know if you know this, but he has a machine that makes it.
That's incredible.
It is. He's got a machine. He makes it. And so when we get like a foot of snow here, everybody here loves Todd. But if you knew that he controlled the weather, you might feel differently when you get a foot of snow going around. I'm just saying. One of these days we're going to get Todd in here to talk about all that stuff. You know, Todd is a certified ball knower too, by the way.
Is he?
Yep. He recently ran a marathon not long ago. So congratulations to that, getting it done at that age, making me feel worthless over here.
Man's a legend.
But he played ball. His sons played ball. Now, he did go to the University of Georgia, which a lot of people I think a lot of people know that by now, but he's been here for a long time, and we love Todd. He is the best. And he and our weather crew, when things are going on, dude, they are on point. They are on point with everything because it is cold enough out there we could have had snow. I don't even think it's getting above freezing today. Low of 17 tonight is what I saw.
Something like that. I know it was a high of freezing, which was goodness.
Dude, that's rough. We said a couple weeks ago, old man winter's going to come at some point. He has arrived, and he means business. We got a lot to talk about here today on the program. It's just me, and it's Daniel Bigno back there.
Yeah, great to be back,
ones,
Wes.
On the ones and twos today. Lord of the Streams, Tom Barclay, decided that when it's below a certain temperature, he just doesn't work. So he's not in here doing the show with us today. He said he looked at the weather, and he went, nope. And then I went, didn't you go to Mizzou? Tom, didn't you go there? And isn't it pretty cold there? He's like, nope, I don't work when it's this cold. So that's I'm not making that up. I am making that up, but you could say that I'm not. Come on in here. If you don't like it, Tom, come in here and do something about it. We got a lot to talk about, though, with the portal going on. It closes, I guess, technically in about, let's see if I can do math now, about 32 hours, maybe 33 hours, sometime around there. The portal is still open. Although Tennessee now, as it stands, Tennessee's had a dozen players come in. It's had a lot more players leave. I think more than a couple dozen have left. And again, the official number that you're going to hear, I think it's around 25, maybe 27, somewhere around there. That's a bit of a misnomer because there's I talked to actually John Becker last night about maybe going on the air Friday with the adults down there on the other side of the room and kind of putting these things in perspective on what they mean. Because I think you see these numbers and you get a little bit, that's a lot. And it's a lot of players. But look around the country, this is kind of what's happening. It's kind of the deal everywhere. And it's a little bit of a misnomer because I think a handful of those guys are walk-ons. A few of them are guys who were never going to play at Tennessee. A few more were guys who weren't really even on the active roster this season. So the number is a little inflated in that regard. That's why it gets hard to say. You know, you think about this, there are 85 scholarships per team at the FBS level and I think 120 or so active roster spots. So you got a lot of walk-ons in the program at any given time, and a lot of them – you know, maybe they come to Tennessee with dreams of kind of being a walk-on and being one of those feel-good stories that gets a scholarship, becomes a star, goes to the NFL one day. And, you know, it's one of those feel-good stories, right? That's the dream a lot of these guys have. And a lot of them also have the dream of just playing at Tennessee. They're in-state kids who maybe had FCS scholarship offers or D2 scholarship offers, but they decided they wanted to walk on at Tennessee and test themselves at that level just because they wanted to wear orange. And then some of them stick when they get there. Some of them get there and then they think a certain type of way that I'm going to be playing ball every day and I'm not playing a game. Because for the first time, when that hits you, it can hit pretty hard. Because even if you're a walk-on football player at the University of Tennessee, you were probably a darn good high school football player. You were probably a guy who was never really picked last on the team at recess. You know, you were never pick up football, basketball, soccer. You were never like, oh, I'll take you last. I mean, you're one of the first guys picked. You probably started for several years at the high school level. You probably are used to playing football. And so you get there, and then you walk on for a while, and you go, you know what? I kind of love wearing this power tee. This meant a lot to me. This was a dream. I got to run out there and do that. But I kind of want to play football again. I don't want to just practice football again. I want to play. So they go to an FCS level. You've seen that, right? Like Braylon Harmon, the kid from Knox Catholic, who actually caught a punt in the Tennessee bowl game against Indiana there. Or I'm sorry, not Indiana, against Illinois there in Nashville. And now he's gone into the portal, and he's going to go to Austin Peay because he wants to play, and he should want to play. He's good enough to play. You look at the receiver depth chart at Tennessee, and you go, well, he ain't going to play here probably. I mean, it's like, what are you going to do? Be like, hey, sorry, SEC freshman of the year, Braylon Staley, get out the way. That's not how it goes. So he wants to go somewhere else. So that's what I'm saying is these numbers look a certain way, and they're not great. They're not what you want, but you are prepared to handle that. There are really only maybe a handful of players in there that Tennessee was just really not happy to lose. And I would say that's the same pretty much everywhere. Bama's lost players that didn't want to. Ohio State has. You know, Vandy just had its best season ever, I think, or at least in the modern era for certain. And it lost a couple guys who went to teams that objectively were not as good as Vandy last season. It could be money. It could be Pavia is leaving and they don't want to. They're not really sure what's going to happen next season. It's a year-to-year thing. So everybody is losing guys. And so what happens when you're Tennessee, you got to get your scholarship numbers to a certain point, and you got to have your roster numbers set to certain points by certain dates. So when you sign a class of, let's say, 25 kids, and you really only had like 14 or 15 seniors on your team the previous year, and maybe a couple juniors who want to go pro early, you've got a surplus of bodies there, and you're still going to want to add guys to the portal, through the portal. So you know what that means? Do simple math. You're going to lose guys. Like, you're going to have conversations with guys, and you're going to say, of these 10 guys, we need 6 of them to go. So we're going to have really frank conversations with all 10 of them, and we're going to tell them, hey, we like you as a player. You're going to have a chance if you stay, but I'm not sure you're ever going to play as many reps as you want here. So if you want to stay, that's fine. We love having you. But if you want to go, that might make more sense, and we'll help you find a good place to go play ball. Some of these situations are that. Now, you will absolutely never hear most coaches, and you darn sure won't hear Josh Heupel say that ever. Ever. But not publicly. But when you do the math, if you have more signees coming in than guys you lost from the team before the portal, and you want to add guys through the portal, you have to have a bunch of guys go. So when people freak out at these numbers, I tell them again, it's not about that. Not really. Now, is, like, for instance, Jordan Ross a guy that you want to lose? I'd say no. Even someone like Jake Merklinger, who, congratulations to him, former quarterback's going over to UConn next season. He might get a chance to play a lot there. Knowing what you know now, would you want to lose Merklinger? Probably not. I mean, you'd like to have that guy available. You know, Lance Hurd, you were going to have to move him from left tackle to right tackle next season to keep David Sanders around. And I don't think he had any interest in that, Hurd. And he was also asking for a really big number that may have made it more difficult to get some other guys you needed. So, but are you happy to lose Lance Hurd? No, he's been your left tackle. And he's been solid. I don't know if he's all world. He's really good. You don't want to lose him. So there are guys in there that you definitely don't want to lose. Do you want to lose Ricky Gibson, like, just as pure talent? No, absolutely not. You don't. Full stop, you don't. But in that situation, he kind of held you hostage last year, which is his right, and you paid him a lot of money, and then he got hurt in the first half of the first game of the season, and then you go to the next season, and he still wants more money, and that's fine. That's his right. But you have to make a decision then, and you got a new coordinator coming in. Hey, I can go get guys. I've been around the block for a while, Jim Knowles. I know what I'm doing. I know a lot of guys that I've coached at Ohio State, Penn State, that are good enough to come here and play. I've coached against guys in the Big Ten who I know could come here and play. So the reason why you're seeing a lot of the Big Ten DBs with Ohio State, Penn State ties, and teams Jim Knowles has faced or players he's recruited in the past, or Poindexter, or you know, the new corners coach, they know these guys, and they know they can come in and help. So you don't really want to lose Ricky Gibson, but you can handle it. You can absorb that. So it's not like I wouldn't say a reason for panic with that number. I mean, I think you have to look at it realistically and see what that number means. Now, you can still see Tennessee has room because Tennessee is still actively recruiting a lot of guys from the portal. They've added a dozen. I think one of them's a walk-on, the linebacker and long snapper, who Emily actually got in touch with via Zoom, and she's got a good story about him coming down the pike. I don't think she's published it yet, so I don't want to let the cat out of the bag there, but I think she's done enough on it now where I could say that. It's a neat story because you got a guy who's a long snapper and a linebacker. That's pretty cool. You don't see that very often. I don't know if he's going to start, he's not going to start linebacker. I don't know how much he's going to play, but he could. And at the very least, that's a heck of an athlete for a long snapper to go down there and make some plays. So, yeah, I mean, he might have to wait a couple years to do either role at Tennessee, but he wants to play at Tennessee. Played at ETSU, then played at Eastern Kentucky. He's kind of always wanted to go to Tennessee. Now he gets a chance. It's a neat story. But so Tennessee's really, I guess you could say, added 11 from the portal if one's a walk-on. So they're still looking at a bunch of guys, a bunch of DBs they're looking at, a couple linemen they're still looking at. They put out a couple new offers just in the past couple days. The tight end who was at Georgia, and a really touted prospect, and played some at Georgia as a true freshman. And they always have a bunch of tight ends, so that's impressive. Anytime you play as a true freshman tight end at Georgia, you're pretty good. He's a big prospect. I think a top consensus top five prospect at tight end coming out of high school. Had some sort of a congenital medical issue. And so he had to kind of medically, not retire, but medically DQ for a while, spend a couple years kind of getting that right, and now he's been fully cleared to come back. He's in the portal. And Tennessee tight end Ethan Davis has known him for a long time and wants him to come play with him. So you don't want to lose Jack Van Dorsselaer, which happened a couple days ago if you're Tennessee, but you go get that guy. You got an intriguing freshman coming in, Luca Wolf, who has one of the more – I hope – there's times in life where you hope – I mean, I want the best for everybody, really. It's – there's your kids playing out their dreams. If you want somebody to fail in that regard, I would say check yourself. Make sure you're a human being with a soul if you don't want some of these guys to achieve their dreams. So I like it when they all go out there. I'd like to see both teams play well and just one of them wins. But this Luca Wolf kid, there's stories that are really interesting – and you hope in particular for the journalist that you are that the intriguing storyline becomes a really good one. And I'm just going to take a guess that Luca Wolf is the first SEC football player in history who is an Austrian native with Filipino ancestry who went to the NFL Global Academy in London. I'm going to guess nobody else has ticked those three boxes. I think we're talking about some historical precedence here. And you always hope that's a good story because, hey, man, it's interesting. It's not like the Australian punter story, which stopped being interested a long time ago because I think there might be more Australian punters than American punters in the game now. All these Aussie rules football players are coming in here and banging the ball a billion yards. It's still cool, but it's not really an interesting story anymore. Unless there's a personal story there with somebody that's interesting. The concept is not. But like Luka Wolf's story as a concept, there's got to be some layers of that onion. There's got to be. That'd be a fun interview to see how he ended up where he did, got going in the sport. I'd like to have that conversation at some point. But the point is, at this point, the portal will close in 33 hours, I think. So if you feel like there's some things that you're worried about, that's fine. But you think what you want to think. My policy has been that, well, if you're going to have an answer in 33 hours, you can wait 33 hours to freak out because it could change. Just go about your day, chill, get the news when it comes out. We'll see what goes on. And then 11:59 p.m. Eastern or whatever on Friday, if it ain't good then, okay, yeah, that sucks. But until then, it's just the way my brain's wired. I don't see the point of freaking out about something that you'll have an answer one way or the other in 33 hours. Maybe this is why I'm a natural procrastinator in ways, because I just don't worry about things like that. You're going to have the situation sorted. And then when you're sorted, you figure out. And we'll talk about here in a minute about the quarterback situation, because I think that is one area where absolutely it's fair to have some concern. There's no question. Now, are there reasons to be excited? Yes. Are there reasons to be even keeled about it? Yes. Are there reasons to be concerned? Yes. It ticks all the boxes. It ticks every box of potential outcomes here. And there are very few situations that really do that, that run the full gamut, that have the full menu of potential outcomes. And this does. And it's such an interesting story to me for so many reasons. You just don't often see something where the options really do run from zero to hundo. You just don't see that a lot. And in this one, you do. And I think we're going to talk about that, but I think we're going to probably talk about that after secret time, I think is what we're going to have to do, because we're bumping up to secret time, and we're going to get to that right now. We'll be right back here in just a second on 10 at 3.
All right, I think we're in secret
time. Secret time. Let's take a sip of old Jumbo over here. Always worry about dry mouth, especially when it's cold.
Yeah.
You know? I just get dry mouth. I do. I do want to brag real quick for secret time today. I only required one trip so far to the office today. Because yesterday I forgot had to go three times, and we talked about this yesterday at the house. So it was a series of events. Forgot that I didn't lock the back door, and after I let the dog in, then I go back, and when I do that, I leave my phone on the table, which I set
Shout
on
the dog.
Table.
By the way,
there he is.
Just since we mentioned,
there's good. Look at him. You know, we're looking at him being. Look at that camo.
It's been on my mind.
You can't even see him. Look at him. Camo. I told him yesterday. I said, "Don't." I said, "Buddy, be a good boy. I love you. Be a good boy. Don't eat any socks and work on your camo." And he found a sock to tear apart because you have a toddler. You have socks, loose socks all the time. But look how hard he worked on his camo. Look
great.
At that. Enemies will never see him coming.
Oh, such a good boy.
They'll never see him coming unless we just got to paint the feet. We just got to paint the paws there, and then we'll be good. We'll be totally camo. But so then I go back and I set my phone on the door or on the sunroom table when I opened the back door. Or locked it. And then I come back And so the second time I'm halfway, I get all the way to the office the second time.
Yeah.
It's not like I had to forget something that time. Like I got all the way to the office before I realized I left my migraine medicine emergency that I have to keep in my pocket 24/7. I left that at the house. And so I had to go back and get it again, but I turned off the house camera.
Yeah.
So my wife couldn't make fun of me. So that's what I did. Welcome back to 10 at 3 here, right here with Russ Rucker and Daniel Bignot, who's just, it's such a fancy name.
It's fancier than I am. I inherited it.
It just sounds like, I mean, it's just, it sounds like, you know, a delicious dessert or like an after dinner drink. You know?
Yeah.
Like, would you like the coffee? Would you like the cappuccino? Would you like the beignet?
Some people like the beignet. Some people like the beignet.
Yeah. Or a beignet with a beignet. It pairs nicely. I'm sure it does. It's like I was sounding the other day. There's that big center for Texas. His name's like Vocachitis or something, which sounds like a disease you don't want.
Do you know how to spell that?
Go to Texas's basketball roster. You'll notice him. He's the rather large guy in the middle of it. He's a seven footer, large guy. And his name, it's Matas, I think, Vocatitis. And it sounds like if he didn't have the first name with it, it would just sound like a simple disorder. But when you put Matas next to it, it sounds like it's serious. It sounds like, oh, if you have the Matas Vocatitis, then you're gonna have to go get, I don't think antibiotics are going to cure that. I don't think amoxicillin is going to cure that up.
I'm sure he's a fine young man, by the way.
Oh, yeah, and he's a nice basketball player, too. He takes up a lot of space, gets a lot of boards. Tennessee tried to foul him out and did, and that helped Tennessee beat Texas. And we'll talk about that team a little bit later because Vandy took its first L of the season last night. The 10th-ranked Commodores lost in Austin. We'll talk about that later. But what I wanted to talk about going into this segment was the quarterback situation because – you know the broad strokes here. You know the broad strokes. Tennessee, probably not going to get Joey Aguilar back. We don't know that. But legally, unless they've got something up their sleeve that we don't know about, which maybe they do, who knows? So it's at least uncertain in that regard. We know that. And so I think you don't want to assume. But I think you have to, and if you're Tennessee, you have to put in a plan just thinking that he's probably not going to be back. And if he is, that's a great bonus. And so you got 2 5-star freshmen, 1 redshirt freshman, 1 true freshman. Then you've got nothing. You got some walk-ons. Hey, I didn't want to disrespect them, but you'd have 2 freshman scholarship quarterbacks. And both super talented. Both 5-stars could have gone anywhere. And so you don't want to turn your nose up at that. I mean, these are the kind of guys that historically you build programs around. But we live in an era now that's a little bit different in that most of these playoff teams this season had old guy quarterbacks. And more than 50% of them transferred into that school. Look at the 2 playing for the title on Monday night. Heisman Trophy winner Fernando Mendoza goes from Cal to Indiana. Right? Carson Beck, 24-3, is a starter at Georgia. Goes for a lot of money, just like Mendoza. Gets a lot of money, goes to Miami, and hey, they're playing for a natty. Mateer at Oklahoma, same thing, right? And Moore over there at Oregon. Started his career at UCLA, transfers over to Oregon. Older guy. And so you just go down the list and you see what the trends are. Now, that doesn't mean you have to do what everybody else is doing. But when a vast majority of the most successful teams, again, Trinity Chambliss, again, most of these guys, old guys, and a lot of them started their career elsewhere. So other people develop them, then you get to reap the rewards of it when they land in your – they get, you know, Operation Dumbo dropped right there into your program, and they're ready to go from day one. They just need to learn the offense, but they know the college game, and they're comfortable. There's no atmosphere that's going to be too big or too bright for them. They're seasoned. They're good. Throw them on the grill. They're ready. And Tennessee would be doing unless something changes, and it could, there could be a guy who comes into the portal that nobody expected to, right? One of those suspicious things where he goes into the portal immediately with a do not contact tag, and you're like, huh, I wonder how that worked out. I wonder how you already know where you're going. I'm sure there was no tampering there. You just went into the portal with a do not contact tag. I'm sure that's all on the up and up. I mean, we know how the game is played. Even if you're born at night, most of us not born last night. So you get what happens. It's not that you condone it, but you can't catch it. You can't catch it. It is what it is. And so Tennessee could do that. Tennessee could be bringing in maybe someone from the FCS ranks, someone from the D2 ranks, somebody who is old and has played college football. So at least he would have some college experience. So if you're two freshmen, both go out there and they're either hurt or the thing's moving a million miles an hour, feels like their head's swimming in a bucket like every snap, they're not ready, then you could call on someone who at least has experience playing college football. So that would, in theory, be someone who has a step above like your walk-ons who presumably have not played at the college level, because it's not like a Gaston Moore situation where you had a guy who, speaking of French names, who had been in that system for years, and Josh Heupel trusted him any point to go in there and throw a gas pipe in there and he'll throw it around. And so that is a situation that if you want to be concerned about, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that's nonsense. I'm not going to sit here and tell you there is no reason to be concerned about that. But just because everybody else is doing something doesn't mean you got to do it, right? How many parents have said this over the years? Well, if all your friends jumped over a bridge, would you do it? You know, just because all these other people are doing all these things, these illicit behaviors, do you have to do it? Everybody's parents told them that at some point. I'm going to tell my kids at some point. When they get a little older, I'll be like, hey, this is what my parents told me, and I'm telling you. I don't think you're going to listen because I didn't listen, but I'm going to say it anyway. Because half your blood is mine, so you're probably not going to listen. And so I can't sit here and say that that's not a little bit of a concern, because it is. It absolutely is. There's no question. Because now we live in a world where I don't know if you can deal with that, because it's a year-to-year world. It's not like everybody goes, oh, we're building around this guy. It'll be fine. You take your lumps this year, come back next year. Well, what's your roster going to look like? Nobody knows. We don't know. That's why I said it, been saying for months, I could see a situation where a college just kind of stops recruiting big-time high school quarterbacks. Says, yeah, if somebody wants to come, we'll take them, but we're not spending a lot of money there. We're going to go to the portal shopping every year. Because we'll let somebody else develop some of the basics in this kid. Let them spend all the time, sweat, blood, money, equity, all that and all that. And then we'll just take them when they're a little more polished. Sounds like a lot less headache to me. That sounds like a smart investment, you ask me. You know, let somebody else train them up. Then you just got to teach me your offense and a couple little mechanical things you prefer, and boom, there you go. Bob's your uncle. It's easy. Now, I don't know if anybody's going to do that, but, I mean, think about it maybe. And Tennessee's like, no, we're still going to go get some five-star quarterbacks, which means that you're paying a lot of money up front because you are not getting a five-star quarterback out of high school for a discount. You're just not getting it. Does not work that way. Doesn't work that way. So you're spending premium money usually on an uncertain product, which you could sit there and say, well, Wes, isn't that what 99% of recruiting is? Yes. I would counter with nothing's more important than quarterback. Nothing is more important than quarterback. There's a lot of really important positions on the field. A lot of places where in this day and age, if you're bad in a certain area, you can be exposed in a hurry because an opponent's going to know exactly where to attack you, where to exploit you, get you spaced out, make that person make plays in space. It's like a former Tennessee coordinator offensive coordinator I used to cover used to say, he would watch film and he would go, "Where's my guy?" He didn't say it that way. He said, "Where's my starts with a B." He would say, "Where's my and what he meant by that was, "Where is this weak chain in this defense? Because that's my guy. That's my biddy. That's who I'm getting after. That's who I'm going after." And so he would watch film to say, okay, here's their best guys. Here's their weak spots. This is where we're going to attack them. So if you're bad anywhere, coaches these days, everybody's got hours and hours of film on most of these guys, dating back to high school in some cases. So they may not know exactly what you're going to do, but they know who you've got, and they know for the most part what those strengths and weaknesses are. So you don't want to be bad anywhere, but if you're bad at quarterback, I mean, there's just so many things you can't do. So many things offensively you can't do. The way you manage games, there's things you just can't do. And when you have a quarterback who's young, you're usually not running the whole offense. And we saw that during the year Nico Iamaleava was the first-year starter at Tennessee. There were a lot of things that they just didn't run. And they preferred, which I get, 10 things at 100 miles an hour versus 100 things at 10 miles an hour. That's the right – when you're in that situation, I think that's the way to go. And he didn't like throwing over the middle of the field. They didn't like having him put the ball in dangerous spots, so they didn't turn it over, but there's also plays they didn't make. There were reads that were second or third options on a play that occasionally he wouldn't get to. He wouldn't see him. He'd tuck it and run, which, again, you can live with, but when that's the highest paid person in your program, there are expectations with that. Guys in the locker room know what other guys are making. They shouldn't, but they do. Everybody knows. Young people talk. It's what they do. And their agents talk, their representatives. Everybody knows, for the most part, in the ballpark at least, what everybody's making. And when you're spending a lot of money on places where you're not getting total production, it can be an issue. And just from a practicality standpoint, young quarterbacks don't always have the full menu of things to go from. So it is a lot of risk. Now, Tennessee took some big swings at some of these portal guys. A few of them, handful of them, just didn't get them. That happens. When you're going against LSU, sometimes they get your guy. That's just, there are teams you go against, and if they get you, tip your cap. Hey, they got a lot to sell over there too. So there's times where you're just not going to get the guys you want the most. And then sometimes when you do that, there's guys you could have had before that, they were already gone somewhere else, but you were waiting on the guys you really wanted, and you took a swing at them and you didn't. Hey, that's life. But I think now you're in a situation where Tennessee, you got, if you go this way, you have got to go get another quarterback no matter what. You have to go find somebody under a rock somewhere who has played some college football, started some games, and can be your emergency guy. And if it's FCS guy, D2 guy, whatever it is, we've seen some of these guys come up and be really good. But you have to – there's two ways to look at these things. There are times where you never want to bring anybody in unless you see them competing at some point for the starting spot. If you're just bringing in somebody in for to be a warm body for emergency, generally speaking, you don't do that because, you know, chances are they're not going to play and they're just going to leave in a year after that anyway. So it's not, unless it's an emergency, why are you doing that? Well, there are times where it is an emergency, and I think right now with Tennessee, this qualifies as one. And I think you've got to go find somebody. Because the question's not, do I go get somebody who's better than these two freshmen potentially right now? That would be ideal. But that's the ceiling. The floor is get somebody better than your walk-ons. You got to go get somebody better than your walk-ons. Because you're just a couple plays away. How many times in a year have we seen a team at Tennessee and elsewhere need more than two quarterbacks? It does happen. They get hurt. Things happen. They get hit. Things happen. Every time I look at a picture of George McIntyre and he's not eating food, I think he should be eating food. He has put on weight since he's been at Tennessee. Good weight, but he's skinny. Still is. Tyler Bray always was, and that worked out fine. I mean, it happens. But freshman quarterbacks tend to get hit a lot because there's some lessons they got to learn. This is how long I can hold the ball. This is how long I can't. This is how I move in the pocket. This is how I don't. This is how I feel the situation. This is how I slide and when I do and when I don't. They got to usually learn a couple lessons the hardest way imaginable. And the SEC is still the SEC. So you're going to get hit. You're going to get hurt. Or maybe you're just a freshman who's not ready to play. We've seen that over and over again, everywhere. So if your third quarterback going into a season is a walk-on and not like a Gaston Moore situation, I mean, one of the biggest mistakes you can make as a coach in this era where, and this has always been true, but it's especially true, I think, in this era where so many people have social media, anything can go viral at any time. You don't have to sit there and be like a scout to point something out that's bad for people to get an idea started about a fire about what's going on. You know what I mean? And so one of the biggest mistakes you can make is making a decision that everybody questions immediately on the front end as, wow, this could be bad. And then it goes bad. Don't make the mistake that everybody can see coming. That's what really gets coaches in trouble. There's a couple things. If it's the same mistake over and over, you're in trouble. Because most people will forgive most things exactly one time. More than that, goes down every time. How many people will accept that? And then the other thing is making a mistake or a call at the time that people say, boy, that could be bad. That's a risk. And then it doesn't work, and then you don't have a backup plan. That is when people really start to question, why am I paying you all this money? Why am I giving you all this many resources? Why do you have all this information? Why do you have this position when you've made a mistake here that Joe Schmo or Jane Schmo on their couch could have seen coming? That's where you don't want to be. That's when people start asking questions. So if you're Tennessee right now, my opinion, not a fact, it's opinion. You got to go get another scholarship quarterback. Don't care where they're coming from. Got to be somebody who has played some college football, preferably an upperclassman, but anywhere's fine. You just need another scholarship quarterback. You got to make that happen because it's just so easy to see. This could be great. It honestly could be. That is a legitimate possibility that this is great. There's also a possibility that this is a mistake that a lot of people saw coming on the front and he didn't do anything about. And that's where you can't be as a coach. That's the Kenny Loggins danger zone. That is a bad, bad place to be. Tennessee needs to avoid that. I'm telling you, who am I? I'm an idiot over here, but an idiot who's seen some things and some stuff. And I'm smart enough to know, not a lot, but some things about if you do this, this is going to be the reaction. If you do X, you're going to get Y. Just how it goes. We got one more segment. We're going to wrap this up here in just a minute with some hoops talk. We'll see where it goes, those final segment. We always, that thing can skid off the rails in a good way. So, again, the full gamut of options is available there. But we'll get to that right after we get to this break right here in 10 at 3. Secret time too.
Oh yeah.
It's always funny to sit there because this job inherently at times is questioning people who usually know more about something than you do.
Right.
And I think a lot of people in this business don't fully wrap their brains around that. And I don't mean that disrespectfully. I mean that in just, I'm not someone who's like reverential to anybody really. I don't, other than my parents. All right. Like I just don't.
And Gus.
I respect everybody, but you can't do what we do if you're a timid person, right? You're dealing with a lot of alphas, and if you walk into a room timid or meek or anything, you're going to get run over in a second, right? But part of this job is, like, questioning the tactical decisions of, like, a Hall of Fame coach or, like, evaluating the performance of somebody who's a million times the athlete you ever were or ever will be,
right?
Because of genetics and work ethic and name your factor, right? That doesn't mean that you can't criticize, but I think it means that you always have to have benefit of the doubt in your mind.
Right.
That doesn't mean that benefit of the doubt like fully, but you always have to think, like, in my opinion, hey, I'm questioning this. I'm not saying I know it better than you. I'm saying I got questions. You know what I mean? Like, those are different things. Welcome back to 10 at 3, where we are. We had a good secret time there. I'll bring a little bit of it to light. We were discussing the part of this job where you question athletes who are more athletic than you've ever been or will be, and coaches who have forgotten more about the game than you'll ever know. Especially when you're someone whose job is to opine about this. If you're a reporter, that's one thing. But early in my career, I was a reporter, and I'll still report things, but now I'm kind of asked and paid to do something else. And so, but when you do that, at least the way I handle it is, I'm not going to sit here and say empirically that you have done the wrong thing, like with X's and O's, or because I can suggest things, but I always suggest them with a little bit of respect because I'm going to sit in a room with Josh Heupel and go over quarterback mechanics with him or who you should recruit and who you shouldn't. Or like, I'm going to go with Rick Barnes and over there and watch film with him, which is you watch film with that guy. And I've done that. You watch basketball film with Rick Barnes in 5 minutes, you will learn more about the game than you probably knew going into it. That's how many things he can stop and break down off of in like 5 minutes. So it's like the other night I'm asking Rick Barnes, like, hey, sometimes when y'all break that press, you weren't going and attacking the rim. Is that part of the plan? Or because it looked like when y'all have numbers, sometimes you back off, and I don't understand why that is. I'm sure, is that like a tactical thing that you're doing, or is that players not doing what you asked them to do? And he said it was kind of a combination of both, because even when they broke the press against Texas A&M, that 87-82 double overtime win on Tuesday night there at Food City Center, that he wanted them, if they broke that pressure and they could attack the lane, he wanted them to go attack the rim. If they had numbers, go. Because once the defense gets set, you got to hunker down and play a half-court possession. But if you break press and you got 4-on-3, 3-on-2, 2-on-1, by all means, go attack the rim. What he didn't want was them to, you know, pull up and shoot threes in those situations. Because then you're getting the kind of ping pong game that A&M wants. So it was very, very clear instructions about, hey, there's a couple of green light all the time shooters. Anytime they have a clean look from three and they don't take the shot, they're getting yelled at. That's what a full green light is. Anywhere within a few feet of the arc, you got to look, you're in rhythm, shot goes up, or you're getting yelled at, unless you're passing to somebody for a dunk. And then there's kind of yellow light shooters, and then there's red light guys. Red light's like, if you ever shoot a three, I will punch you, basically. And then yellow light is, depends on the situation, late in the shot clock, that's fine. But by and large, if you're not taking it from a spot, where I've seen you make it several times in practice and you take the shot, you're at least getting a furrowed brow, and you might get a tongue lashing, or you might be benched for a while. And so it's I didn't want to, like, during the game, I questioned why it was happening. And I asked Barnes, like, I asked Rick, is that what you're asking them to do? And he said, no. Well, he said, yes and no. He said there were too many times where there was an opportunity right there to go attack the lane, like I told him to, and they just didn't do it. And I got into him about that. But there are other times where even if the numbers are an advantage, if they've got the paint clogged up, there's some guys that I don't want taking quick threes in that situation. So it depends on who it is and where they are, is essentially the answer. But he said the bottom line was, yes, what we were seeing was correct. There were times where they broke press, they earned the cookie, which is a good – you do the hard work, you know, you do your meat and potatoes, you get a cookie. And when the cookie's there and you don't want it, I wonder what's going on through your head, because you've done the hard part, go get the cookie. Or wait a second, have the press breakers come back in to play into half court and do a 5-on-5 possession, which is usually harder. And so there's also instances where just because you've beaten the press, if you're a big guy with the ball, you have to look out because the guards are coming from behind you and they're going to rip the ball away. And it happened a couple times. Either when you get a rebound or when you beat the press, they're coming behind you with active hands like that Zakai Ziegler stuff. And Jacoby Gillespie did it once late in the game, crucially to A&M in a situation too. Gave them a little bit of their own medicine in that possession. But really good pressure teams, it's not over when you beat the first press. They're just kind of getting started because they're going to come harass you like a swarm of bees from the backside too. So it's not – my point is there, it's not always what you think it is. And so I try to always remember that in this job, that I will at least ask if I can. And I usually get the opportunity to go ask, like, hey, what was going through your mind there? Like, what was the thought process? Was that the plan and it just didn't work? Or, like, what – you care to comment on that? And usually people will be honest and tell you, yes, meant to do that, or no, didn't mean to, just screwed up. Or, you know, occasionally it's like, I'm not the head coach. Go ask the head coach. I don't want to talk about tactics and stuff or plans. That's I leave that to the boss, which is fine if you want to do that. So that's what I try to do every day, and I candidly wish more people would do, because you don't just – I think it's irresponsible to just throw stuff out there to the masses and maybe be wrong about it. I don't – but you can't be timid, but you got to be fair. And so that's – that's where I am with all that. And that ties everything together that we talk about today, but really any other day on this show, is that I'm going to tell you what I think, but I'm never going to sit here and say I know more about any sport than one of those coaches over there that I cover. I'm not going to – that's preposterous. It's insanity. So, but they're not infallible. They're very mortal. They're very human. They're flawed like all of us are. They're not perfect, right? It's like you tell people, like, you're somebody's daddy, you ain't mine. You're somebody's coach, you ain't mine. So I'm going to call you by your first name because that's who you are to me. You're not my coach. And I'm going to question what you do when it looks weird. But I'm not going to go into it assuming that I know more about the game than you do. That's nonsense. It's ridiculous. And when I do that, I kind of get secondhand embarrassment. When I see other people do this, I'm like, do you really know this to the level that you're saying that you do? Just whatever. That's their business, not mine. But last night in hoops in the SEC, second straight night where things were getting frisky. Things were getting very frisky. Kentucky, which is coming to Food City Center on Saturday for a noon Eastern game against Tennessee, was down by 18 points and came back and beat LSU at the Horn. Great shot, by the way. It was almost kind of like a Leitner-ish play in that. It's triggering for Kentucky, I get, even 30 years later. But still, I mean, if you're LSU, you just can't let that happen. If you're Kentucky, hey, they fight. And that's what's interesting about teams like Kentucky it's not quite as hectic as A&M, but it is that kind of full throttle, full tempo game that you can be up by 15 or down by 15 and the game's not necessarily over because they're going to keep going fast. And the benefit of that is that, like, if you compare that to a Tennessee and Tennessee's down by 15, 20 points, you don't really feel like there's much of a chance to get back in that game unless there's like 25 or 30 minutes left. It's possible, and it's happened before, but it's just not something you see a lot. But when Tennessee's got a big lead in the second half, you can usually put that to bed. They can take that game and swaddle it, rock it, give it a nice smooch on the forehead and put it in the crib, and it's down for the night. They can kill a game now. They can do that. And when you're an A&M or you're a Kentucky, the benefit is that you never really feel like you're out of a game. But there's a flip side to everything. And that's that even if you have a big lead, you're concerned because it could change in a hurry. And so it's just kind of a matter of how much of the game do you want to control and how do you want to control it? Do you want it to be chaos because you feel like you bring the game into the mud, that's your game. And you play the kind of game you want, not the kind of game the other team wants. You can win. Versus someone who feels like they control the game with a slower tempo by relentlessly attacking the glass, by doing what they do, which is making you uncomfortable, getting you out of your comfort zone, and physically being a nightmare to handle. Like, it's probably not fun to run up and down the floor with an A&M for 40 minutes, but it's also not fun to battle Tennessee or Florida on the glass for 40 minutes. I mean, Tennessee out-rebounded A&M 60-35. It's nuts. It's nuts. One of the craziest stats I've seen in a while. For an SEC game, that's crazy. But so physically, it's just how do you want to attack people? You want to make people uncomfortable. But do you want to do that with pace or do you want to do that with physicality? Right? And we won't have time to get to it today, but that's kind of what Bucky McMillan, the A&M coach, talked about. I did put it in the show notes yesterday, which would have been Wednesday's episode, January 14th. Also threw it up on the socials, some of that post-game chatter that we had with A&M coach Bucky McMillan. And there's good stuff there, and I encourage you to go look at that on the socials there and on the show notes. We'll probably drop it in the show notes again today, where he talked about that, where you can be good at what you do and somebody else can be good at what they do, and styles make fights, which I said going into that game, and it's a fun thing. And so that's why Saturday is pretty interesting to me, and we'll talk a lot more about that tomorrow, but kind of who gets the kind of game they want it to be. Because that game the other night was kind of A&M getting the tempo it wanted for a while, and then Tennessee kind of eventually found a way to wrestle it back and get it into an arm wrestling match, which, unless Tennessee's playing Florida in recent years or Houston one time last year, Tennessee, you get an arm wrestling competition, Tennessee's usually got the thickness to top you there, the muscle to top you there. And so, but there was a lot of other things. That Georgia-Ole Miss game, you know, came down to a buzzer beater again. That was a great game. Vandy took its first L of the season. That Texas team that came to Tennessee and got messed with. Tennessee, by the way, I think they're the Texas state champions now, beating Houston, Texas, and A&M this season. I think they get the crown for Texas state champions. But Vandy, which had been unbeaten and is still a really good team, went to Texas and lost by double digits. And that was going to happen at some point. I still think Vandy's one of the best teams in the country. I still think it's one of the best teams in the SEC. And I think statistics kind of show that it is. But I'm going to credit a good friend of the show, Will Warren, who does a lot of basketball metrics stuff, Stats by Will on Twitter. I think you should definitely follow him. He knows ball, certified ball knower, and a good guy too. And he talked about that going into the game, about how that particular matchup was one that Vandy needed to be careful with because Texas did some things that were strengths where Vandy had some weaknesses. And in a midweek game, that just kind of felt like it could be a problem. And it was. He nailed it. Good call, William. You nailed that one. But it also doesn't mean that, like, Vandy's overrated. It doesn't mean – it just – you go to Austin, you lose, it happens, right? It's just not the end of the world. Arkansas whooped up on South Carolina in Fayetteville, but you kind of expect that. That's nothing surprising there. They did put up 50 points in each half, though. put up a hundo burger. But there's a lot of really – the league looks interesting to me because I'm not sure. There's a few – I think you could maybe say a few title contenders there. But what there are is there's a tremendous amount of teams on that next tier that with the right set of circumstances could be elite, but they're kind of inconsistent, erratic, so you don't put them in that top tier. But they're dangerous enough to be in that tier, and they're talented enough to kind of sit in that second tier. There's a lot of those teams in the SEC this season, a lot of them. Cannot wait for the next couple months of basketball. That will be fun. That will be fun. I'm really looking forward to this. And I'm telling you, I'll end with this, that Tennessee team, first time in a few years that I really do believe Tennessee could be a much better team by the end of the season than it was going into it. I think, and I've talked about that before, I still think it. No matter what happens Saturday, I'm still going to think it. I think there is something there. Not guarantee anything, but I think this team will frustrate you again a couple times. No doubt. No doubt. Full stop. No doubt. But it's also enough, it's got enough there that I think things could get interesting down the stretch. And I think there's another level for that team with those freshmen growing up too. So we will see. Lots more to talk about. Tomorrow will be the final episode before the portal closes tomorrow night. So obviously we'll have a lot of portal talk Friday. And then again on Monday, we'll preview more of that Tennessee-Kentucky basketball game tomorrow. We got a lot to do, and we're going to look forward to doing all of it. But for now, we're going to say goodbye for 23 hours. Y'all have a good night. Be safe. We'll see you in 23 hours.